Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. The date is September 29th, 2008. For our first guest, his name is Wayne Madsen, who has been a naval officer with some 20 years experience in security issues. Currently, Wayne is an investigative reporter out of Washington, D.C. He has had appearances on ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, CNN, BBC, Al Jazeera, and MSNBC. He has been invited to testify as a witness before the U.S. House of Representatives, the United Nations Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and a terrorism investigation panel of the French government. Hello, Wayne?
Yes, hi. Good to be with you.
Well, there's an awful lot more that you've done in your life that it would have taken at least 2 hours just to, to touch on everything.
Well, yeah, I've done quite a bit, but I think there's a lot more that needs to be done still.
The first question I have for you, you wrote an article which exposed how the Bush family has been profiting off of the transfer of public land to private interest. Could you tell us a little bit about that article?
Yes, this came to me actually from one of the presidential candidates who's running, visiting parts of the country and talking to people who obviously can't get this information to the corporate media because, you know, the corporate media is in cahoots with the people who are, you know, committing these criminal acts and taking public lands and even private lands and turning them over to their exploitative wealthy friends. But in the case of the California fires, there was a massive set of fires in 2003. They've been plagued with those fires since. Apparently, many of these fires were started by arsonists. Others were part of then Secretary of Agriculture Ann Veneman's Healthy Forest Initiative. And what happened is that in one case, one of the residents in San Bernardino County, California, saw repeatedly a helicopter fanning flames towards these older residences, these older homes. Of course, in many cases, these older homes were destroyed. The land was up for grabs, basically. People didn't have the insurance to rebuild. The land became available to speculators, who then, of course, erected these huge McMansions for, you know, multimillionaires. What I was told by some reliable sources is that the Bush family, particularly the Bush 41, is very much involved in the land title companies that transferred title of the land at a fairly handsome percentage. So this, I guess, is what Naomi Klein talks about in her book, books about the shock doctrine, about disaster capitalism. We see this in action.
And in your article, you talked about how the Western Shoshone Nation, the Native American nation in California, parts of Nevada, Utah, also into Idaho, has actually lost some of its land, something like 24 million acres for $135 million.
Yeah, right. And this was part of a so-called settlement of treaty violations between the federal government and the Western Shoshone Nation, which saw them getting paid a mere pittance. I think the only previous land grab we saw like that was when the United States purchased Alaska from Russia for like, 3 cents an acre or something like that. So, yeah, this was a massive ripoff of the Native Americans, but not the first time we saw with Jack Abramoff and his band of criminals tied to the White House how they schnookered the Native American tribes on these lucrative casino deals. So not much has changed as far as how the federal government and its cronies deal with the Native American population.
And also we have to remember New Orleans at the same time, sorry about that. We have to remember New Orleans and what happened there with Katrina in the way that as soon as the Katrina hit and it destroyed it, I've heard reports that some of the levees actually had burn marks on them, which showed the possibility that there could have been some type of implosion happening there. Have you heard anything on that?
Yeah, I heard the same. I talked to people who had the same information. I talked to people who had firsthand information where they heard explosions that where they absolutely knew these were explosions that brought down these levees in key areas. And of course, what we saw is public housing tracts in New Orleans that were not even affected by the Katrina were then declared inhabitable for the people who live there, the poorest of the poor in New Orleans. They were forced to leave, and now they're going to be building those public housing tracts are going to be turned over to these speculators, these real estate speculators that are going to build these condominium shopping center units that none of these people who live there could ever even hope to afford.
And we also have to remember the millions of people that were sort of like put as refugees within the United States, all caused by this. What's happening with all the people who are now declared to be sort of like refugees that have to move all around the United States or from that area?
Well, I mean, believe it or not, Houston still had a lot of these people from New Orleans who were still living in Houston. Now, after, you know, Houston was hit, the Houston area was hit by Ike, you know, these people once again are being uprooted. I think we're going to see the same sort of unscrupulous land developers come into Galveston, which many of those coastal barrier islands were wiped out, where the, you know, people can't afford to rebuild, and we're going to see these people buy up the land at a song. And of course, old man Bush lives in Houston, so he knows where these properties are located. So I think we're going to see more of the same in Galveston and the Houston area.
Yeah, I was talking to someone from that area, Stan Norrett. I had a chance to interview him a couple weeks ago. And what happened was I haven't been able to get a hold of him since the hurricanes hit. And I hope that he is okay, he and his family is okay. But he was telling me some stuff about that was happening down there, that they were starting, there was a group of them, they were starting to be self-sufficient. And now that this hurricane's hit, it's almost like they have to start right back at square one. Do you see that in the United States where groups start to be self-sufficient or no longer, or move themselves from the grid, and all of a sudden the government doesn't like it and then just moves in and just does something to destroy them, to send them right back to sort of they have to work within the system?
Well, the problem is that the people in the United States are so poor right now. They really don't know where to start to be self-sufficient. You know, they have to rely on the government for assistance for health care if they can get it. I mean, the government is cutting back. I mean, I just think back to the day when Grover Norquist, who was the big economic, he's a financial Nazi. He said that the government has to be shrunk to the point, to the size where it's so small it can be drowned in a bathtub. Now, this is a guy who basically has consulted. He's not a member of the Bush administration. He's a very, very good friend of Karl Rove, and he's consulted with this administration, and he's now very close to the McCain campaign, so we'll see more of the same. I understand it was people like Norquist who basically convinced McCain to bring on Sarah Palin on the ticket, so she obviously is one of the believers in that. You don't worry about people, you just let them fend for themselves, whether they want to or not. I think most Americans want government intervention. We see that on Wall Street, this idea of people going out to live in, you know, mountainous areas and creating. I don't think most people would even go for that.
And also that leads us right into the next question. You wrote an article which talked about how the Klan, KKK, and other white supremacist groups have been tied to one of the advisors for Sarah Palin, who's the vice president candidate for the Republican Party.
Well, even better than her advisor, her own husband, Todd Palin, was very much involved in this Alaska Independence Party. The Alaska Independence Party is part of a group of parties in the United States, secessionist parties, the largest one of which is called the League of the South. Now, they're neo-Confederates. They want to see the restoration of the Confederate States of America. These are out-and-out racists. They can say whatever they want about, you know, that their only interest is in preserving Southern heritage. Southern heritage is slavery. Southern heritage was all about Jim Crow laws during after Reconstruction. So now the thing with Palin is, the reason the Alaska Independence Party finds common cause with the League of the South and other similar groups is that they want to create, they don't want to reverse the situation where Alaska becomes independent, which probably would have happened had Russia retained it. But they don't want to see a native Alaskan population running things. They see Alaska as a homeland for white people. As a matter of fact, Palin herself has referred to the Inuit people and Aleut people of Alaska as mucklucks, and she's called them Arctic Arabs. So she's an out-and-out racist, and she goes along with this idea that if there's an independent Alaska, it would be a homeland for the white supremacists.
And also, there's when I did a past interview with a gentleman, he talked about how Microsoft had been stepped in to help out the Catholic Church, and it paid off some of its debt. At the same time, it started to put its records on the computer. And recently, I remember I ran into an article that you wrote, and it talks about the Microsoft chief had been given head of state rights at the United Nations. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I covered the UN General Assembly meetings last week in New York, and Bill Gates was there, basically given head of state privileges. He was there at a news conference with Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General, and Gordon Brown, the British Prime Minister. He was running all around town, basically being feted as this, and I said to somebody, I said, I think the UN must have made a terrible mistake. Micronesia is a full member state of the UN, not Microsoft, but the way Gates was treated up there, it was clear that he was being given head of state privileges. He was pushing this concept of the Millennium Development Goals, which he said he loves those. They call the MDGs. This is really just an attempt to recolonize well over 100 nations. You get them to sign on to these requirements. They must do this in healthcare. They must do that this in the for the their economy, and then that's basically a bribe to get them to sign up to these Millennium Development Goals, and that they have to sign up to those and meet those goals in order to qualify for economic aid. It's sort of like means testing for welfare recipients. So what they've done is they've turned that process into a similar, like there's these nations around the world that have been exploited for centuries by the West, and now you're going to do means testing for them to still get economic aid by getting them to sign on to these draconian milestones they must achieve. As the new Prime Minister of Nepal, who's the head of the Nepal Communist Party, Maoist, he said, look, the poor countries of the world can't even think about achieving these Millennium Development Goals. Basically, these MDGs are part of this whole Bilderberg, Davos, Global Trade, World Trade Organization nonsense, and it's really an attempt to, as I say, recolonize many of these countries. Not with governors from France or Britain or even the United States in charge, but basically lickspittles for these local people who are doing the bidding of these Western powers. And we see that with Uribe in Colombia. We see it with probably three-quarters of the leaders in Africa and a fair share in Asia. They're nothing more than, they're basically puppets for the Western nations.
Yeah, because in the past I interviewed a gentleman who talked about the World Bank, Bush Sr., Dick Cheney, and how the First National Bank, which is the Mormon Bank, had got involved, started lending out these gigantic loans to these countries that can't afford to pay them back. So then they turned around and they said, okay, we'll allow your bank to start printing money, and we'll go buy that business, we'll put about 10% down, and your bank will print the rest of the money to buy the rest of the business. And that leads right into the next question, is that you wrote a book which is called Overthrow a Fascist Regime on a $15 a Day, The Internet Irregulars versus the Power to Be. Could you tell us a little bit about that book?
Well, it was basically to let people know that on a very small budget, you can try to compete, and sometimes you can succeed in competing with the major media. The Internet's the only tool we really have left. In the past, of course, in the Soviet Union, there was the Samizdat press, small printing presses that put out information on paper that basically challenged the Soviet Communist Party media apparatus. But with the internet, my intent in the book was to show that living in Washington, D.C., which is one of the most expensive capitals in the world, you can at least make an attempt using the internet and using it, you know, with a very frugal budget, you can compete with the Fox Newses, with the Rupert Murdochs of the world, with the Bill Gates and the MSNBCs and the Disney and their ABC and Time Warner and their CNN. It can be done, and that's basically the book's about how over the last 8 years I was able through writing articles on the internet and starting my own website and basically competing with these mega media companies.
And what is your website so the listening audience can go visit later on?
Yes, it's WayneMadsenReport.com. It's W-A-Y-N-E, M-A-D-S-E-N, report all one, all together, .com. And it's basically what I'm trying to reinstate in Washington is the spirit of muckraking journalism that existed here for many, many years in syndicated columns by first Drew Pearson with the Washington merry-go-round. And after he passed away, it was taken up by Jack Anderson, who's also, unfortunately, a few years ago, passed away. He'd been sick for many, many years. But that kind of journalism where you write about the dirt, regardless of threats of lawsuits and regardless of whether you get invited to parties or not, that kind of journalism really doesn't exist here any longer. And my intent was to basically reinstate that type of journalism here in the nation's capital.
So you're telling the truth. You're telling people the truth is what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the corporate media is many of these reporters socialize with the people they're supposed to cover. They go to the same golf courses, same country clubs. They go to these White House correspondent dinners, and they sit there and it's all joking and laughter with this camaraderie. Journalists are not supposed to socialize with the people they're covering. It's okay to talk to them as far as that kind of social, but not to become friends. You cannot be an investigative journalist and have these relationships with the people you're covering. It's just not journalism to do that.
And you wrote an article on AIG, who was recently bailed out to the tune of $85 billion, U.S. taxpayer money. And AIG, the reason why it was bailed out is you were saying that it had been involved with some CIA operations. Could you tell us about that?
Well, yes, AIG is an old, very old company. It was actually started by Cornelius Starrs, that's spelled S-T-A-R-R, and anyone who followed the Bill Clinton impeachment hearings probably remembers Ken Starr, who was the independent counsel who was basically prosecuting Bill Clinton. Cornelius Starr, the founder of AIG, that's Ken Starr's uncle. Ken Starr's uncle, Cornelius, eventually turned over control of his company to Maurice Hank Greenberg. He's the guy who runs it to this day. And Cornelius Starr was in China for many years after World War One in the interim period, and established a relationship with OSS, and then which became the CIA. And it's quite clear that especially Chinese intelligence at AIG has always been a front by which the CIA would bring businessmen into Asia under non-official cover as AIG executives or employees, and then they would perform their various tradecraft in places like China and Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and other countries.
Could this also have been a CIA covered for bringing the poppy back to United States and Canada via when the AIG representatives returned back to North America, that they bring back the poppy crop with them?
Well, I mean, the history of U.S. Trade with China is, of course, you go back to, you know, the opium wars. In the late 1800s, there actually is a group of Cheneys. Yes, it's the Vice President Dick Cheney's ancestors who were members of the Skull and Bones, and you can go and look in the membership rolls of these Cheneys from Connecticut. Now they eventually went to Nebraska, and Dick Cheney's group went off to Wyoming, but the original Cheneys were all listed as being in the silk trade, with China. Well, the Silk Trade was nothing more than a code word for the opium trade in those days.
And also, May 18th of 2006, you wrote an article which talked about the Cuban and Venezuelan government intelligence concluded 911 was an inside job. With this in mind, do you feel that one of the reasons why members of the Bush regime have on more than one occasion attempted to overthrow President Hugo Chavez is because these individuals are afraid of anyone who is able to undermine their words with real evidence?
Oh, absolutely. But You know, Chavez and President Ahmadinejad of Iran, obviously they both said that they think 9/11 is much more than 9/11, as has some of the leadership of Cuba. They're easy targets, but we've had former government ministers in Britain and in Germany, and even the head of the upper house of the Japanese Diet have all come out and said they believe that 9/11 was an inside job. But it's easy, to, of course, to demonize Chavez and Ahmadinejad because we are actively trying to overthrow their governments, whereas it might be a little harder with the governments of Germany or Japan. They're not certainly not lone voices. And we actually had the former president of Italy, Francesco Cossiga, say the same thing, that he knew that 9/11 from his sources, he has a lot of them in NATO, he said that 9/11 was not only an inside job, but it was planned by Israel's Mossad.
Currently, the Russian government is giving NATO ships a deadline to be out of the Black Sea. What have you heard about that?
Well, I know there are ships in the Black Sea. Once again, the neocons who don't honor any international agreement, because the neocon to me is a new name for Nazi. Hitler tore up all the international agreements that Germany ever signed. One could argue that the Versailles Treaty was going to happen to that anyway because it was very unfair. But all these other agreements, the League of Nations, he tore up. Now, access to the Black Sea by naval vessels is governed by the Montreux Convention of 1936. The U.S. is a signatory, and now we, in violation of the Montreux Convention, have these ships in the Black Sea longer than they're allowed under that convention, and Turkey is the other nation that has to make sure that that agreement is adhered to. So apparently Turkey also wants us out, wants our ships. They've been lingering around these Georgian ports too long, but we'll just see. You know, I guess if Turkey puts its foot down, then they'll join the axis of evil.
And also, who are the individuals and corporations behind causing the situation which has caused the U.S. government to step in and offer this $700 billion bailout or corporate welfare check?
Well, it's the people that... Remember Bush one time said that, you know, to a bunch of wealthy donors, you know, that they were his base. This is who they're bailing out. This is welfare for billionaires. They don't have any problem taking welfare away from a struggling family where there's a single parent. They have no trouble doing that, but they want to give $700 billion. Most people think that's actually going to wind up being $1 trillion to these companies. They want, you know, CEO severance pay, these massive platinum parachutes, payouts, and it's just Bush helping the crooks. The crooks who put him in office, and really, the fact is that while they're, you know, I always said if they're nationalizing these financial institutions, why don't they go ahead and nationalize the oil companies and let's get oil down, gasoline down. Not that I want to, get people dependent on fossil fuels. We need to get away from fossil fuels, but people in Venezuela are paying 15 cents a gallon for gasoline. That's because the state controls the oil company. It's a state-controlled oil firm, and if we did the same thing, of course, we could be paying 15 to 20 cents a gallon for gasoline, too. But I don't think Bush, who comes from the oil industry, or Cheney, who also comes from the oil industry, want to nationalize that industry, but they want to help their multi-billionaire friends out, not only in Wall Street, but, you know, these people scattered all over the country. And, in fact, they're bailing out billionaires around the world who have invested in these various firms that are now going under.
Yeah, and also with the Canadian election in 2004, it was said that the oil interest was behind committing the coup, which allowed Stephen Harper to come to power. Stephen Harper is therefore, his policies are utter destructive towards the environment up here. And he there's this agreement called NAFTA. What it does is it gives 60% of what's being mined over in the tar sands down to the United States. We can never decrease that. A little while ago, we had the refineries over in Ontario shut down, and Ontario needed the gas. They had to go over to the Middle East to get the gas because Alberta could not provide the gas to them because they had to continue shipping it down south. So what you're seeing is you're seeing these massive neocon slash corporate elitist that have come to power behind the scenes, and all of a sudden they're starting to, you know, get bigger and bigger with the finances, and it's getting other disgusting even to look at it. With that said, can you see any of these elitists that caused this problem be going to jail for the crimes they submitted, or once again, is it going to be like the only difference between a criminal and a politician is one goes to jail for committing crimes while one gets elected as to lead the people?
I like to think that they would go to jail eventually, but let's face it, Barack Obama, his major financial supporter is George Soros, and he's no different than the wealthy who back Bush. I mean, he claims he's a progressive. Progressives do not go and undermine the currencies of developing nations, putting millions of people out of work. Progressives do not foment coups against democratically elected governments, as Soros did in the case of Georgia, where the democratically elected Edward Shevardnadze was ousted by Saakashvili, who became a dictator supported by the neocons. Four members of Saakashvili's cabinet in Georgia, including the prime minister, defense minister, economic minister, and the so-called reintegration minister in charge of taking back or taking in Ossetia, South Ossetia, and Abkhazia, are dual Georgian-Israeli citizens. So this is what this is all about. Soros backs these operations. He's backing Barack Obama. I'd like to think that Obama would do something about it, but, you know, you can judge somebody by the friends they keep. You can even better judge them by the donors that they have. And in the case of Obama, Soros is a cancer in this. He's as cancerous as Rupert Murdoch or any of the other of these what I call vulture vampire capitalists in the world today.
Well, it looks like we have to wrap it up because we have to head over to our next guest. But before you go, Wayne, could you leave some contact information, your website address again, and where the listening audience can get a copy of your novel that you wrote?
Yes. Well, the website is WayneMadsenReport.com. That's WayneMadsen Report.com. And, of course, the last two books I wrote about Bush, Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day and Jaded Task, The Blood Politics of George Bush and the Family. They can get those via my website or from Amazon or all the other online booksellers.
Well, thank you, Wayne. We'll have to get you back on in the future when we have a little bit more time. That was a really great conversation that we had.
Super. Good to be with you.
And that was Wayne Madsen. He's a Washington, D.C. investigative reporter. And we're going to take a quick break. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger.